Blog Talk Radio.
Again, to all of our listeners tonight, welcome to Empowering Lives and Shaping Destinies. I am your host and your sponsor, Dr. Yvette Canary. Welcome again to tonight's Empowering Lives and Shaping Destinies. I am your host and sponsor, Dr. Yvette Canarick, and tonight we will be talking about health and weight management. We are continuing our New Year's series. But before we get into the program tonight, I am going to ask you to reach out and call a friend or a loved one and say to them that there is a lot of good information that will be shared here tonight, and this is something that they will not want to miss. For those of you who are going to be logging in via your computer, you will go to https://blogtalkradio.com/thenewnation. And you look for the episode, the New Year series, Health and Weight Management. For those of you who are calling in, the number to call is 347 57 1311. And I will spell out the website for you. It is www.b as in bridge, L as in London, O as in Oregon, G as in green, T as in tango, A as in Adam, L as in Larry, K as in Kentucky, R as in random, A as in Adam, D as in Denver, I as in Iceland, O as in Oregon.com / the new nation, and that is T as in Thomas, H as in Harry, E as in early, N as in Nancy, E as in early, O as in orange, N as in Nancy, A as in Adam, T as in tango, I as in Iceland, O as in orange, N as in Nancy. And the number again is 347-857-1311. And I will give you some time to call your friends while we listen to Mr. Barry Weber Corbin.
Yakriv mikem karban, karban lashem. Udom, ki yakriv mikem karban, karban lashem. Oy 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 oy, oy oy oy.
Rebound the shell,
And that was Mr. Barry Weber and Corbin. And you are listening to Empowering Lives and Shaping Destinies. My name is Dr. Yvette Kinnarick, and I am your host and sponsor. And tonight we will be continuing our New Year's series, Health and Weight Management. So we will begin by doing a recap of what we have been talking about for the last month or so. When we began, the first week that I began on the time series, I explained what happens to our body based on our circadian rhythm. And our circadian rhythm is a roughly 24-hour cycle that most of us adhere to. It might be a little shorter, it might be a little longer for some people. But over a 24-hour period, there are specific key neurochemicals and different kinds of preparedness that the body engages in based on what the brain is doing in its connection to the outer world or to the environment. So we are totally integrated into our environment in that we live, we breathe, you breathe in and out. That's one of the things that where we interact with the environment. So we are interacting with the environment 24/7. We also pick up things such as light and sound and temperature from the brain as well. And I spoke about the key areas in the brain, the SCN or the suprachiasmatic nuclei and the pineal gland. And these two, they connect, they get the information from the environment. It goes down to the middle portion of the brain or what we call the mesolayer. And it goes to one of a primary organ called the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus has primary function with respect to heat, cold, light, darkness, and an array of things that affect our internal homeostasis, such as when we get hungry, when we are full, when we are thirsty, when we are tired. The hypothalamus is also involved in the production of melatonin. And melatonin is a neurochemical that kicks in when the sun goes down. And this neurochemical allows us to fall asleep. In one of the earlier discussions, I talked about the fact that in our modern times, there is so much light, there is so much artificial light that keeps us awake way beyond the time when we should be asleep. And what happens is that as long as there is light coming in, our brain waves will continue to turn at a relatively high oscillation. So if you think about oscillation is how the waves, Well, if you think about the waves in the sea, and you have small waves and you have larger waves, the larger waves is when you have boisterous conditions, or we are actually so alert that our brain waves are functioning at a very, it's turning at a very high altitude. And then when melatonin kicks in and we and we begin to wind down, then our brain waves begin to turn at a lower altitude and slower until we fall asleep. But artificial light keeps the brain from going to the lower state where it's turning at lower waves and keeps us awake for a longer time than we should fall asleep. In one of the previous episodes as well, I talked about the different stages of sleep during the night, and we could divide it into 3 hours, three hours time 3 hours, which is optimum for most of us. The research is now saying that as we age, we should get more sleep. We also know that young children in school, they do not perform as well if they're not getting enough sleep, if they're not getting the optimum number of, or the optimal number of sleep every night. So when we have these lights and we have all this energy coming into the brain, preventing us from falling asleep, we do not benefit from the three stages or the three sleep cycles. And what are the three sleep cycles? One, when you fall asleep, your brain is at first trying to compartmentalize what happened during the day, and then your brain will file information in the relative, in the right, in the correct filing boxes, so it's easier to retrieve and integrate into any new experience that you might have. Then you go into the second type of sleep and dreaming, which some people refer to as venting dreams. And it is at this time you vent things that you are suppressing. Some people think that you vent things in the last 3 hours of the night, or the last 3 hours of sleep. Others think that it happens in the middle 3 hours. However, one of the things we know that in the middle 3 hours, we do connect with other realms and alternative realities. So people will tell you that they've dreamt their parents or friends or someone who has passed away. Or then they might tell you that they have this dream, it looked like this place, but it wasn't really this place. They are experiencing alternative realities. And then just before you wake, that last area of the night, what happens is that your brain projects into the day. How does the brain do this? The brain does this by using the hippocampi, which is a primary area for directions, decision making. And your hippocampi will tell you ahead of time if there is traffic down the street. Now, if you're listening, your hippocampi will say, don't go down the street today, use an alternative route. And you would sometimes not listen because we've learned to argue with our brains and our subconscious. And then what happens is that you find yourself going down the street, and then you get stuck in traffic, and you'll say, you know, I was told that I should not have done this. And you regret that you've gone down there. So those are the three areas and the three broad time of sleeping. And for optimal sleep,
it is recommended at least 8-9 hours. That is optimal. If you are getting by on 6 hours of sleep, then you are not giving yourself enough time for your brain to do all that it needs to do and what it has to do to keep you alive. Having optimal sleep as well also allows your body to rejuvenate. So as we grow older, we are always losing cells, which is called degeneration, but we are also having new cells being birthed, which is regeneration. So when you go to bed at night, you do have regeneration taking place, but if you do not get enough hours of sleep, then that regeneration does not happen and you begin to age. And then as people begin to age, they find themselves becoming sick, and people will say, well, this is old age, or this particular condition developed because you've gotten to this age and it is normal for this to happen. Well, it is not quite normal for it to happen, because there are people who have lived way past the 100 years. And in some cases and in some societies, people live beyond 200 years. We don't always hear about these people. They are like monks and people who spend a lot of time in the mountains, in the Himalayas, and they very, very often have very, very, very limited connections with humans, as well as with other things that we engage with on a regular basis. So we did talk about time, and we did talk about your circadian rhythm. And in that episode, I discussed the different things. Now, for the purpose of understanding how we eat, there are a couple of things that is good for us to know. And one of those things is that when you eat before the sun comes up, like 1 hour before the sun comes up, your body does something different than if you ate after the sun came up. I also mentioned that just around 9 o'clock in the day, there is a release of cortisol. And what cortisol does, it helps to break up fat that is stored and metabolize that fat. But cortisol is also a stress hormone. And why is it linked with stress? Well, when you are under stress, your bodies will begin to require more energy. And last week when I talked about what your body does under stress, I remember saying that when your body is under stress, your brain directs energy to the area of the body that the brain believes it is most needed. So if you are having a physical threat, then your brain will begin to send energy into your outer areas, your hands and your leg and the thigh and your feet. When you have a lot of emotional stress or emotional trauma, then the brain will send the energy to your core. And last week when we were talking about how we gain weight, the week before, I mentioned that weight gain occurs in different parts of the body. And where that weight settles is an indication of the issues that you are facing. So one of the things that I do when I have clients who come forward to address their weight challenges, I ask them, where are they most dissatisfied with the weight? And they will tell me, well, it might be around my hip, it might be in my legs, my thighs, it might be in my stomach. They will tell you where. And you can see, you can look at them visually. And it will tell you what kind of stress, the major kinds of stress that these people have. So what the body does, which is something I spoke about last week, but I'm going to reiterate it. What the body does, the body begins to store fat. And the reason why the body stores fat, and we're talking now about people who have been under a lot of stress, aggression in proximity relationships, aggression in their life, in their emotional life with their partners and their children, financial stress. When we begin to have stresses, the body begins to require more energy. But as you begin to require more energy, the body is going to say, listen, we need to conserve energy. And when the body decides to conserve energy, it begins to use carbs and sugar very sparingly. And what happens is that people begin to have spikes in their blood sugar level. Because when you eat, your body is saying, no, only use a small percentage because there is some stress right around the corner. And at that time, you will be needing a lot more sugar and carbs available to you. So we are going to keep your sugar level high all the time. Over a period of time, this is what becomes homeostasis for you as an individual, and the doctors will say you have high blood sugar. However, somewhere along the line, the doctors start giving people things that will make them relax and make them sleep, because what would happen is that with a high blood sugar in your system all the time, people begin to have sleeping troubles because now they'll have the lights up late in the night and the television to help them drown the troubles. And then now when they go to sleep, the brain is going and turning and turning and turning, and they are asking for more and more energy. So the body learns that during the nighttime, blood sugar levels should be high. So then the patient will go to the doctor and say, I'm having sleep trouble, and the doctor will give them something to sleep. And that can have two effects. One, it could begin to alleviate some of the stress that you have, but then it further slows down your metabolism. And when that happens, you will find that your blood sugar is again escalating and going out of whack. Last week we talked as well about homeostasis, and we said that homeostasis is a balance that we experience as a means to keep us in a place where we are comfortable, where we are not under a high level stress. And we did talk about some of the implications of high level stress. So we are going at this time to play some music. So we are going to go play some music. And then when we come back, we will continue this discussion.
Я من عشابة إما مهرين بلو بوي دوشي هشن زي راف روبوم ويا بوي هما أخرم لتس من عشابة إما مهرين بلو بوي
Sponsor. And tonight I want to thank all of you who are here in the studio with me, and I want to wish all of you a good night again who have continued to join for each of the sessions that we are doing here. So tonight we are continuing our series on health and weight management, and so far I have been indicating that our stress levels play a very, very important role when it comes to our weight management. So I'm moving on, recapping, because some people, when you hear things over and over again, things begin to gel. Sometimes I'm repeating something that I might have said, but then I might add something else to give you fuller understanding. So we talk about the fact that the body goes through these changes over a 24-hour period. And there are key times based on the neurochemicals and what our bodies are doing. It is a key time for eating. So we do have the cortisol level around 9:30. And then somewhere around 11 o'clock in the day, there is a dip in our sugar level. where people would want something to help the, get their sugar level back. Now, it doesn't mean that if, for example, if a person is diabetic, it does not mean that their blood sugar level has dropped. The blood sugar level is being maintained because the body is saying that you need to maintain a certain amount of sugar in your blood because you have to run, you have to flee, you have to fight. And because of that, even though you may have the need for a sugar lift, and some people might have coffee or soda or whatever, giving some quick sugar into the system at around 11 in the day, it is better if we are prepared for this. And it is better if we have something, some kind of protein, where we begin to train our bodies to have protein to metabolize, to stay in the system longer and keep us full for a longer period of time. We again have a drop in sugar level at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then 1 hour before sundown, wherever you are, the body begins to produce neurochemicals that is vital for burning, metabolizing. So there are some key areas, times in the day that you want to be mindful of. So now I'm going to talk about two things. One is homeostasis, and the other one is addiction. Last week we had a conversation on homeostasis. Homeostasis is the body's determination to be balanced. Over a period of time, our body develops a certain pattern. So it calibrates, it uses information from our history, it uses information from generational history, and your current conditions, and it's as though the body now develops a formula. And they are the body now takes these bits of information and numbers into account, and then it comes up with what the body thinks you need to maintain homeostasis or to remain balanced. When I talked about this last week, I talked about slavery. Now, I keep going back to slavery because slavery lasted for so long. It affected so many people, and it is now getting old. When people say, get over it, it's how many centuries ago? Well, the answer is no. The answer is our body has generational memory. So inside our generational memory, the body knows that there were periods of time, long periods in our history for 300 years, that you, your ancestors, did not get enough food, and they were not fed on time. So what happens is that the body now has in its generational memory, you got to eat more because that time is going to come again, just in case it comes again. But it has happened before. It happened for 300 plus years. So it is quite likely that it will happen again. So when you eat, you have to eat more. You have to eat more than other people, more than other races, because guess what? In case you go back to slavery again. And in any case, you are experiencing slavery on the job, so therefore you need to eat more. So your plate is always bigger than people who have not gone through slavery. Then the body is saying, remember when you were a child, how much energy you used? Therefore, we're going to take that history, and we're going to consider that you used a lot of energy running around. And just in case you decided to go back to running around like that, then we're going to make sure that the right amount of energy is in your system. Remember, the brain does not decipher and your spirit does not decipher that you are getting older or younger. You do not have a sense of aging. None of us have a sense of aging because our spirits do not age. So they're taking that into account. And that is why as people get older, they gain weight. And then women come and they become pregnant and they gain weight and they get to a certain weight. And after they have the child, they do not go back to their previous weight, but they stay at a higher weight because guess what? Just in case you get pregnant again. But then you will say, but I'm menopausal. Well, guess what? You're probably menopausal because of all the drugs and the GMOs that you are using. There was a time in the lives of human species that people had babies very late. The brain is not calibrating that. It is calibrating that we are species. So it keeps this this calibration on. So the brain responds to survival. And survival is if there is a risk, high risk, the brain is responsible and required to keep you alive. Burning, having fat on your body is designed to keep you alive in times of famine. There is another dynamics. There are people who talk about foodless food. And foodless food is food that is the equivalent of cardboard. There are no nutrients in the food. Or the food is designed to break you down. So then you are perpetually in starvation mode because you are eating or we are eating foodless food, food without nutrients. So then the body takes that, the brain takes that into perspective and it develops homeostasis, balance to keep you alive. And remember, you have to have some to run because when you have to run, if you are abused, then you need this extra fat that you could burn. And if you're in a job and your life is insecure on that job, then guess what? You're going to store fat just in case there comes a time when you lose your job and you can't buy food. So what is happening is that your brain is at enmity with you and the heart and the mind are not equivalent to each other. And then we talk about addiction. So last week I touched very, very briefly on addiction and we are going to take a break. And when we come back, I will be talking some more about addictions.
בימים היא תפתח לי את השער אשתי כארוכה מלטפת היא נמצאת עוד מעט היא הולכת שנים שאני עוד שר לה שולח פרחים ולא די לה ימים שאני מחכה לה היא הולכת אני משתגע הלכת הלב שוב נשבר לי שרפת את כל מה שהיה לי הצחוק מתגלגל גם העצב השיר זה כל מה שנשאר לי תרחמי עליי ותתני לי אהבה לעולם אל תלכי לי מסתובב בלילות מול ירח קורא לו עונה וצורח
האור הזורח, הוא שותה לעולם לא שוכח, רוקד מטורף מול ירח,
נעלם מכולם ובורח. אף אחד לא מבין מה קרה לי, איך ברגע פתאום נעלמתי. הם אומרים שאני משתגע, מסתובב ברחובות וקורא לה. בלילות מול ירח קורא לו עונה וצורח, תרחמי עליי ותתני לי אהבה לעולם, אל תלכי לי. מסתובב בלילות מול ירח קורא לו עונה וצורח, את הלכת הלב שוב נשבר לי, שרפת את כל מה שהיה לי. הצחוק מתגלגל גם כל מה שנשאר לי.
And you're listening to Empowering Lives, Shaping Destinies. I am your host and sponsor, Dr. Eva Kinnarik. And tonight we are talking about health and weight management. And believe it or not, all the discussions earlier on was just to bring back to the minds of all of us some of the things that we discussed over the last few weeks. So tonight I'm going to talk about addictions. And before I talk about food addictions, I am going to describe how addictions work, because this will allow us to understand why people are addicted to substances, why it is difficult for them to break the habit, and why it's not always a good idea for people to cold turkey, because they could literally die if they are not weaned off their addictions. And one of the things I do when I do therapy with my clients, I work with them to assist them in several areas of life. And addictions is one of those: tobacco addiction, sugar addiction, food addictions, fat addictions, pornography, and a range of things that causes addiction. So when we talk about sex, and I talk about this in my series on sex and wealth, I have said that your first sexual experience, positive experience, now we're not talking about people who have been abused and raped and so on, we're talking about consensual sexual intercourse conducted in the right way. When that happens for the first time, there is a combination of pain and pleasure for both the male and the female. And this combination, it's like a sugar sweet, salt and sweet, bittersweet is a combination. It makes this very unique combination, and it causes your dopamine levels to spike. So it opens up the dopaminergic pathways. And that high becomes your ceiling. So you think about it as your ceiling. That is your baseline. You never go beyond that. And that is why people try all kinds of different kinds of sexual behaviors. And what happens is that each time a new behavior is brought in, that becomes the baseline or the threshold, and you never go beyond that. So this is how addiction works. So if you would think that you had a substance, you had sugar, you had fat, you had sex, you had tobacco, you had heroin, you had drugs, you had different things. Your body, let's say it goes up 12 inches. So let's measure it. It goes up 12 inches. If you had sex again the second time, it will never go to 12 inches. It will go to 11 or even 8. Because that high benchmark is the ceiling. Same thing for tobacco, for drugs, for sex, pornography, etc. So then what happens is that we begin to increase what we are doing, because we want to get to that high, but we will never get to that high again. And the more we increase what we are doing, we are developing a tolerance for it. What happens when we begin to develop tolerance? Now, we have cells. Motivational cells. And let's talk about the dopaminergic cells. there are other things that come into play, like the GABA, which gives you that sense of satisfaction and peace, the serotonin, which makes you happy. So we're talking about weight. So there is the dopamine that gives you that high, the rush. Then there is the serotonin that makes you happy. It lights you up with the food. And then there's the GABA that gives you that sense of fullness and satisfaction. So all of these are an interplay of neurochemicals. So you say now, you know what, I need something sweeter, better, faster. So you're taking sweeter stuff. You're taking stuff that has more fat content in it because you want to get to that benchmark. Then the brain says, here, listen, we are being flooded with this and we don't have enough cells to deal with the flooding. So what we are going to do, we need to get rid of some cells. Now, it doesn't make sense, but it does make sense. And I'll tell you why. Because the brain is saying, because I said last week, the brain and the body, they are integrated, it's one, right? So the brain and the body now is saying, okay, too much of this is coming up. We need to send a message down to the body to stop sending so much stuff here. And the way to do that is to lose some of the cells. So the body will realize that it doesn't have as much cells up here, and then the body will stop sending up so much. But there is a disconnect because we don't know, because of many other things, we have this addiction. So what happens is that the amount of cells that is in play to manage what's coming up is now reduced, and that further compromises your position to overcome your addiction. So that's how addictions work. The food industry design foods to make us be addicted to the foods. And they design those foods around three primary foods: sugar, fat, and salt. Those are the three foods that they design, the addiction is designed around these three foods. So food scientist or neurologist or anyone that is being used to do research will talk about food that is palatable. So in our daily talk, our regular talk, our loose talk, we might say, well, this food is palatable. It is tasting. It has a nice taste. But to the scientists who are working for the mega industries, palatability means that the food excites all of your senses or most of your senses. So it must smell a certain way. So there's cinnamon. Wow, just the smell of the cinnamon, the smell of the coffee. It is we are now articulating our senses based on the smell. And then it is the taste of the food. So it tastes different parts of the town. It is spicy. It is hot. It is cold. Different parts of the mouth. Different sensation. But that's the taste. But then there's the texture of the food. It melts in your mouth. You would hear them in the ads. The foods that melt in your mouth. So that is. So we have the smell, we have the taste, and we have the feel of the food. That is the melting in the mouth. kind of experiences with the food. Then, and of course, you have different textures like crispy chicken wings with wine sauce or sweet and sour sauce or something like that. So palatable food stimulates our appetite. There came a time in our history when food lost its value as fuel and food became about pleasure. So when Sigmund Freud talked about the oral stage of development, and he puts that from the time the child is born to, I think, about 12 months or 24 months, I can't remember, don't quote me on those months. He said, here, listen, the child loved the taste, the oral, the taste in the mouth of the child. And you have to remember, if the child is breastfed, that the natural milk from its mother has a sweet taste. So then we are trying to wean the child from breast milk. So we put a little bit of sugar or a little bit of honey in it. And this is a different kind of taste, a different kind of sweetness. It's a different combination of sweetness. And we begin the process of addiction. So if we are eating food for sustenance and for fuel, earlier on I talked about the fact that the body now begins to be in flight fight mode because of the stress. So food is fuel for that purpose. But then food becomes pleasure. And then we engage in emotional eating because we have so much stress that's going on, or we feel bad about ourselves, and we go into eating. And what happens when we get to that stage where food is about addiction? Food industries, they test food to do a few things. They test food to make sure that it is stimulating to our appetite. Stimulation is the anticipation. I remember going into a supermarket, very, very, very big supermarket, and this supermarket caters for food from anywhere on this planet. And I walked up to where they sold the fish, the fish part of the market, and they have crabs, you can get crabs and lobsters, and you could also get frogs. So it was the first time I was moving along that part, and there was a couple, and based on where they lived on the planet, frogs were a delicacy. And they were there, and those people were hyperventilating over just looking at the frogs. Of course, for most of us, we wouldn't have that kind of reaction, but we might have that reaction to cheesecake or any number of things that we've been exposed to, or that which stimulates the palate. This is the reason why the food chains, the restaurants, are constantly changing their menu, because there is constant change to have us be addicted to one thing or another. So this is what I will do at this time. We are going to come right back. And once I come back, we are going to open the lines for those of us who are in the studio with us. I also have a very special person here with me in the studio. And I will put that very special person on the spot for her questions, comments, and dialogue. And all of this is going to happen right after we play another song.
Good morning, evening, friend. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster. Could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain. It's that love in need of love today. Don't delay, send yours in right away. Hey, going round, waking many hearts. Stop it, please, before it's gone too.
Listening to Empowering Lives, Shaping Destiny, and my name is Dr. Yvette Kinnerick, and I am your host and your sponsor. And I am now about to open the mics for microphone for those of you who have questions. And I know that sometimes people send their text, they text their questions, so I'm going to reach out to 518-866 for your comments or questions from yourself or from anyone who have reached out to you. 518-366.
Okay, hi, Ron Robinson here. Very interesting subject matter, because one of the New Year's resolutions that people always make a resolution that they were going to improve themselves. And improvement, 99.9% of the time, is physical. It's weight loss, weight gain, or, you know, getting yourself in shape, getting healthy. And it's around this time when people concentrate on this new person that they're going to be, on this new body. And I'm thinking that, is that stressful? Can that be stressful? Can a person stress themselves by trying to be extremely physical fit, beautiful or handsome, you know? The world today is so much vanity, and everybody's beautiful, everybody's handsome, everybody's dressed as well. You know, everybody looks like they're walking out of a magazine or something, like they're modeling. And I was wondering, just the thought of being slimmer, being better, looking better, living better. Some people want to increase their height as well as decrease their weight, and they will put on heels, and, you know, they would stand in shoes that make them taller. But the whole concept of being physically fit, being beautiful or handsome on a physical level, is that stressful? You know, just thinking about it or trying to do it, is that another level of stress on top of the stress that you have already?
Dieting is stressful. It adds to your anxiety and your stress levels. And there is also another thing that happens, is that when people diet or when they fast, they go into starvation mode. When they go back to eat, the food is saying yes. The brain is saying, you see what happened there? You almost starved. And then the food intake is increased. So yes, dieting and fasting is stressful. And very often, potentially or very often, lead to increase food intake and the yo-yo back up. Earlier on, we talked about homeostasis, and the body has a feel for who they are. So you have a knowledge of you in the brain, and that will include your height, your weight, your taste, your background. There's a sense of you. And last week when I talked about homeostasis, I said that it happens that people will win the lottery, or they will have a lot of monies come into their hands, and then before you know it, it's gone right back to where they've lost all the monies. And that is because the body, the brain, is trying to maintain homeostasis. And remember, the brain works internally, but externally with your spirit or in the electromagnetic field. So the brain will begin to bring conditions to play into your life to keep you in a place of balance or homeostasis. So yes, it is stressful, and that is just an explanation for the reason why some people, they have a yo-yo weight pattern when they try to diet. And does that answer your question?
Yes.
518-868.
Yes.
So,
you can hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I was having technical problems with my phone as well. Yeah, that's interesting that, you know, doing something good for yourself causes you additional damage, if you will, or additional stress, or additional physical or psychological harm, in a sense. I'm not saying like it's real serious psychological damage or physiological damage. I'm just saying that it takes on another form of stress. You know, going, I have to get up in the morning, I got to make it to the gym, I got to eat this, and I got to take that pill, you know, and I can't have this, and I can't have that. I got to count calories, and and things of that sort. And so, you know, unless you're very enthusiastic about it and very serious about it, and maybe do it every day in terms of your healthcare process, and that it's normal, then it takes on a normal form of existence. You know what I'm saying? It takes on another different form when we look at it from that perspective. But I was just saying, like, a lot of people put stresses on themselves unnecessarily because you're not going to lose that weight overnight. You're not going to do certain things, not going to happen right away. And certain things physiologically is not possible with certain people.
We are fed a diet of a constant diet of sexy and appealing on the radio and on television and the billboards. And it's all around us. And some of us want to be like them. But that's not our natural build, and we are not taking into consideration our historical experiences. And that can lead to a lot of frustration, and it can lead to a lot of anxiety that shows itself up in other areas of life. So we have a caller here. 868-376. 868-376. And I'm going to unmute your microphone so that you could pose any question or comment. 868-376.
Oh, that's me. Hello, good evening.
Yes, good evening.
I am actually on the road, so it's going to be a bit noisy. Sorry.
I'm listening
to the program while walking. It's very interesting. I am tuning in for the first time, and all that I have heard makes absolute sense. So, for being able to be a part of this discussion this evening, and I will certainly continue to listen to this program. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome. And I am going to put another person on the spot. I have someone here in the studio with me. And this person is very special. And I think this is the first time that she will be talking on this program. So I'll have her introduce herself and pose her questions or comments.
Hi, good evening, everyone in Radio Nation, around the world, U.S., the Caribbean. I am Auslyn Williams, and I am an older sister to Dr. Yvette Kanarek. Well, for me, it's always Yvette. She is a younger sister. She is the youngest sister. I am very, very honored to be here alive with her tonight. And I feel very special. I just love what I heard tonight. And two takeaways I have. One of them specifically is that the spirit does not age. So we allow our bodies to age. But really, we can do things to prevent our bodies from aging in a sort of normal way that we would consider normal. It's really not normal. My other takeaway is that 6 hours sleep is not really enough for you. I always thought that, you know, I have 6 hours sleep and I'm good, but it's not really enough to regenerate yourselves. So those are my takeaways tonight, and I hope that the listeners really were able to grasp some valuable lessons, because there were so many nuggets that we got tonight. So I thank you. I thank my sister for allowing me this opportunity, and I pray that we continue to listen, be educated. The information is so valuable. It is so relevant. Thank you.
That was Mrs. Williams, Auslyn Williams. She's one of my three remaining sisters. And she is with me. And I told her that I would put her on the spot. So I'm going to go back to 929-586. For any questions or comments.
Okay. Good evening again. This is Joanne again. I have a
question. Yes, good evening. Good evening. I am so pleased, always, Dr. Kanarek, to come in and listen to what you have to say. It is a bountiful release that we must do, and it's hard to do that in this society, in this country. You know, when you were stating that the monks and those other people up in the mountains, which have a different type of stress or no stress, I was listening to a program the other day, and this man was 167 years old. He was in Russia, still living and dancing, you know, at his age. In this society, it's very hard, in this country as well, it's very hard to let go of what we have learned, what we have experienced and accomplished, and all on doing all that is stressful. It affects our whole system of who we are, friends, family, circumstances, situations, business, and so on, because this we have been built on stress. You know, we can be vegetarians, which is good. You know, we can exercise, which is good. but we can meditate, which is all things are good. But to get to things to fire that you're talking about is stressful. You know, it's stressful. So we would have to really just delete ourselves, for a better word, from all the exterior objects and proponents to be in that situation. But I know that there are people. My great grandmother was 106, and she just decided that she put all her business together and her best dress, and she just laid down and folded her hands, and she was gone. You know, to live in that peaceful, to live in that, to that extent, or to be in that peaceful mode, we don't really start getting there until we realize, I don't really need all of this. You know, I didn't need the car. I didn't need to find clothes. I didn't need this. But up to a point, when you have that and you realize, what have I worked for? What do I have? Actually, I don't have peace. You know, I still don't know what love is. I don't have love. Well, I don't have a partner. I'll have a, you know, you, or when you and your partner start looking alike, you know, and so on. And we need to teach our children and look at, from experience, look at these things. And I think would have to be in another place, you know, because even if we go home, you know, the societies they are building and replicating what we have in the Western worlds, but there's still an opportunity even there, you know, to live in a situation of peace. I think you have more of a choice there. Here, it's very difficult, but I always appreciate your lectures on Wednesday. I try not to miss any of them. And I love you so much. God bless.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And we're going to just listen to, this is a love song. And what it is saying is, let's go out tonight. Let's have a quiet dinner, some wine, candlelight, and let's romance each other. And I'm going to play this because I do love it.
למה ככה זה קורה, כל פעם לא יוצא מזה, יושב חושב מה לעשות ולא מוצא תשובות. כולם מנסים להסביר את המצב, אבל בפנים אני יודע שזה לא נחשב. רוצה לעצור את הכל, רוצה אבל לא יכול, לא יודע איך הכל קרה, מהר בלי התראה. אז מה לעשות, מה לעשות, שואל את עצמי כל פעם בלילות, האם תחזור לעולם כבר לא תשוב, התקופה היפה של השקט והשלווה חלפה לך, נותרה בי עוד תקווה. איך הכל היה יפה, רגוע ו...
שונה, פתאום הכל כל כך מוזר. רק חושב על המחר, מקווה שיהיה לי טוב עמוק בפנים, שאני לבד עם עצמי ולא רק עם חברים. אז מה לעשות? מה לעשות? שואלת עצמי כל פעם בלילות, אל תחזור לעולם כבר לא תשוב. התקופה היפה של השקט והשלווה חלפה לאך נותרה בי עוד תקווה. שום דבר מרגש, מרגיש בתוכי תחושה של עצב שורף. מסתובב ברחוב לא מבין מה כולם רוצים, ושוב נשאר לבדי עם אותם הרגעים.
And that was one of my favorites, musician, Mr. Umar Adams. I call him good boy, bad boy. When he's good, he's very, very good. And then sometimes he does some things that people say are horrid, but I do like his music. So I'm going to come back to 868-376. And I'm coming back to you for additional comments, questions.
I wanted to ask a question in relation to sleep and the hours of sleep. I heard you mention 8 hours of sleep is what we actually need. But if a person doesn't get 8 hours of sleep during the night, how does the day pan out if a person try to catch some sleep during the day? Is it different from night sleep?
Well, when you sleep, yes. When you're sleeping during the night, even if your eyes are closed, you're still taking in light. And one of the things I ask people to do if they're trying to get their sleep right, I ask them to make sure that all the lights are turned off. And if possible, you throw a towel or so if you have LED lights and so on. And trust me, if you have to get up for a particular time, your body could be so trained so that you will wake up when you have to wake up. I'm not going to tell you to do that if you're going to catch a plane or a train, but I am telling you from my own experience that that has always worked. So if you're sleeping in the day, it means that even though your eyes are closed, you are still bringing in light from the outside, and your brain does not relax sufficiently during the day because you have not gotten the kinds of sleep at the specific time that you need the sleep for the specific kinds of light
and neurochemical and neurological processes. Now, if your situation is one where this is the best you can do, it is better than not getting optimal sleep at night. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And then if so, during the day, can someone put on a sleep eye patch? So it could be done enough? So as to shut off the light of the day?
The answer to that is a little different because there is a small number of cells in the eye that is sensitive to light. And even when you're sleeping in the dark and you've turned off all the lights, that part of the brain is still accessing light that's coming in from the moon and the skies and the stars and so on. Our bodies are very, very unique and, as I would say, wonderfully made. Yes, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So we're going to go back to 518-866. Okay, 518-866 is, he is contemplating. So I would go back to talk again about physical exercises, which is quite good. Physical exercises is really good, but physical exercises is not a fail-safe measure of weight gain or weight loss. So a person expends more energy doing mental work than when they exercise physically. So there are people who they have had maybe broken bones and they were forced to stay in their beds, or they were forced to just limit their work to mental exercises, and to their surprise they lost weight. Because the brain uses more energy when you are involved in mental work when compared with physical work. There is a song that I like to play at the end of the evening. And this is a prayer. It is a prayer that is said at the end of the day. It is sometimes said at other times. Sometimes it's said at funerals, but we are definitely not talking about funerals here tonight. But it is a song, it is a prayer, and I will play that prayer for us now.
Ladoin hakoi, to seis kedu lo liyo yitze bereishi. Oleinu lashabeya, ladoin hakoi, לא סייס גדו לא ליוצא בראשי עולינו לשביע לא עדוין הכוי לא סייס גדו לא ליוצא בראשי עולינו לשביע לא עדוין הכוי לא סייס גדו לא ליוצא בראשי שלא יוצא goyeyo harotso velo intomo ke mishbekhoy to asama shela som del keinu koe shela som del keinu koe beto irle ki khol hamoyno
Shit.
You're not that.
So I am going to recap what we have been talking about today, and I would begin by saying that there is a right time to eat, and the right time to eat is determined by how our brains interact with the environment and the type of neurochemicals that we produce at set times in the day when we should eat. I also pointed out that there were times, and there are times in the day when we do have a drop in our sugar level. And I made a distinction to say that does not mean to say that your blood sugar level has dropped, but it is just that your body is asking for an energy boost at two times specifically in the day, which is at 11 and then at 3. I want to add that we are more likely to eat more if we have not slept well. And not having optimum sleep or optimal sleep will trigger eating. It will trigger energy eating. So we will look for carbs and sugars that it's metabolized very quickly to give us that energy that we think we need or which we need to do what we have to do. And to just, manage for the day. I also indicated that in one of the series, one of the casts that I did, I did point out that we have been programmed to eat at specific times. And I talked about how we have been herded, the time we wake up in the morning, the time we have to get to work, the time that they tell us the bell is going to ring for us to go and have something to eat as children. And we are conditioned by the bell the same way that Pavlov's dogs were conditioned to eat. So those are some of the things that we talked about over the last few weeks. Now, next week, we are going to go into deeper details of the neurons and the different brain structures and how they impact weight. And when we do, we will be able to tie everything in together so that we could begin to help ourselves. For those of you wanting to reach out to me so that you could either benefit from therapy or you could come into one of my group sessions, because I do group sessions, my number is 407-236-4501. I want to repeat that number again. It is 407-236-4501. And that time is coming where we are about to end the program. I want to take the time to thank you for being here with me. I want to thank those of you who have participated, and I am looking forward to seeing you again, same time, same place. But before we go, I would ask Mrs. Williams to just give one more parting word.
Thank you again. What I can say is, please continue to listen. Please continue to invite your friends, relatives, because this information you should not keep for yourself. It's really, really valuable and relevant, as I said before. So keep on listening, and please invite your friends and relatives to come on Wednesday evening and listen to this program. Thank you again for listening.
And as we always say, do not learn alone. And that is the sentiments of Mrs. Williams. Do not learn alone. And at this time, I will play the very soothing Shirat Hanavat by Mr. Yusi Azuli.